شبهك الله يا قدسي
because I can see a few people a bit worried. Okay.
I'm not used to that free space. Okay. What can you see? What did you think you've heard?
Is that a call to worship?
It's more than a call to worship. It is the worship itself. That's liturgy. That's Christian liturgy. What you've heard is actually a mix of Arabic and Aramaic. And what you see there, can you see that?
Abana.
Our Father. This is our Father in Arabic. And maybe you thought that it was something different. Did you think it was something different? Come on, come clean now. Yes. What did you think? Okay. Do you know what? If I could tweak a little bit and find recordings of Arab Jews reading the Bible, the Torah, it would sound very similar because it would be the same language and it would be chanted in the same way. Now, the Quran, maybe you thought that this was a passage of the Quran, because, to us, Arabic is so closely related to Islam that even us, Christians, we almost forget that there are millions of Arab-speaking Christians. Okay. Now, the reason why we're doing that is, obviously, there is a link with the appeal that came up. The situation in Syria, what has happened in the last few weeks in Iraq, as well as in Syria. So there is a strong link. I have personal links with Syria. I spent 8 months in the Syrian desert, right in the east of Syria, and for about 8 months of my life, pretty much every day I could see Iraq. Without ever being allowed to go into Iraq, and that was in 1997, last millennium. And I stayed in a place called Al-Bukamal. And maybe you've never heard of that place, but it was in the news not too long ago, because that's Al-Bukamal, which is a small place the size of Midsomer Norton. Really, it's nothing to it, really. And that's where Daesh, to us it's IS, that infamous Islamic organization, has declared its caliphate. And when I was there, I was looking really for Islamists, but they were nowhere to be seen. And what was strange, I was there as an archaeologist, but deployed by the French government, so I was in link with the embassy, and so I had permanently two police officers outside my house who were just there for the sake of being there, and I thought, why? I'm not sure. There's no point in you being there. And when I looked at them, I sort of thought, first sound of trouble, they would be running. Yes, really, there's no point. Just leave me alone. But that made me a bit of that made me ET, really. I was a complete alien because I was that white guy that had a 4x4, and it was quite difficult in that situation to really link with people. However, I made some very interesting encounters there. I encountered people who were who I call themselves Assyrians. Who are the last speakers of Aramaic. It's still a modern language. People still speak that language. It was spoken about 2,000 years before Jesus. It's still spoken 2,000 after Jesus. And it's the longest standing language. It's just it's quite amazing. And these guys, really, beginning of the century, in the beginning of the 20th century, they were in what is the east of Turkey today, and then they were pushed back because of persecutions. They are Christians, by the way. Christians who have their own right, R-I-T-E, their own way of celebrating, their own liturgy. And they were pushed into Iraq at that time from what is today's Turkey, then Iraq, and they were pushed again into Syria. And it's very difficult to find any information because there's about 50 to 60,000 of them, and it's impossible to get any sort of information. And I think they're very happy to go underground and be and not being noticed by anybody. Please leave us alone. That's their safety at the end of the day. Okay. Right. Abana, our father. You all know the word Abba, okay? Now, that's your first lesson of Arabic, okay? If you say Abbi, that's my father, Abbi. Abana, our father. Okay, so the my or your goes right at the end. Okay, that's your first lesson. You'll be interrogated next time. Okay, let's move on. Through the eyes of my enemy, I've borrowed the title to a book that has just been published. I am still to read the book. It's a book that has been written by a Messianic Jew and a Palestinian Christian. We need to see things through the other's eyes, through my enemy's eyes. And that's crucially important, isn't it? The Good Samaritan. To me, the Good Samaritan does exactly that. We pretty much all know, have an idea of what this is all about. We'll look into it. I'm promising you also another parable. It's not biblical. It's apocryphal. You're getting worried again here. It's just another parable. Okay, it's something that you all know, but maybe you missed what it was all about. Maybe. Christians, Muslims, Jews, Samaritans, Yazidan. You've heard of the Yazidi. These are some of the people that I met when I was in that in the Syrian desert, a community of people who, they've got their own thing. They live as a tribe, and it's not a question of what you believe, really. It's a question of what you follow. If you are born in that tribe, that's what you do. And people are not too bothered about what you actually believe. I've met quite a few Muslims that were very happy to go to church. Especially one guide, Effendi Dawood, for the 20 years of civil war in Beirut, in Lebanon, pretty much every Sunday when it was possible to go to church, he was in church as a Muslim himself, Sunni Muslim. He would never call himself a Christian. He never goes to, well, I'm pretty sure he's dead because he was in his 70s, in the 1990s, but okay. He would never call himself a Christian because, I'm a Sunni Muslim. He never does the prayer, the Muslim prayer, goes to church and does the Christian prayer. But I belong to the Sunni community. That's who I am. I can't change that. But what I do, what I believe, is something different. That's personal. Welcome to the Near East. Okay, praying like Jesus, seeing the world as Jesus does. Okay, let's get started. For the next slide, thank you. Okay. All of us have heard of the horrible things that have happened to the Christian communities in the north of Iraq. Iraq is one of the places where Christianity really developed. It's a birthplace of Christianity. Tim this morning was talking about sitting by the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, we wept. Okay? And that's what you do. By the rivers of Babylon, Babel, that's Baghdad. Babylon is just outside modern Baghdad. It is very much there. We remembered Zion. And then, as the disciples are in Jerusalem, it's not a question of remembering Zion or the temple. It's a question of understanding that now that we are back in Jerusalem, we don't need that temple. So we remembered it. We come back. Oh, and now we realize that we don't need that temple anymore. Let's move on. And now we can go to the end of the world. Okay, let's move on because we're going to the end of the world. Okay, Orthodox. Most Christians in Syria or... not most. Most Christians in Syria and a minority of Christians in Iraq are Orthodox. Okay? That means that they say the same creed as us. That we're going to sing a version of that later on. We believe in God the Father. Okay? That means that they are Orthodox. It means that the liturgy is a mix of Greek, the Greek of the New Testament, read in the text, interspersed with bits of, if I say Aramaic. Aramaic is a version of Hebrew in a way. And if when you hear the Quran being chanted, it sounds very much like the Bible being chanted, or the Christian liturgy being chanted, it's because the Quran just comes from that source, really. And a lot of the language of the Quran itself is the same as the one you would have in Arabic translation of the Bible. Okay, so there is this proximity because the languages are so similar. Hebrew and Arabic are very, very close languages. Pretty much as Dutch would be to Flemish. It sounds so similar. Okay. So you've got a lot of Orthodox. Key point with the Orthodox is that spontaneity is a work of the devil. And if it's not something that has been rehearsed through the centuries, through the tradition, beware, it's not good. So the way of worshipping as an Orthodox is very, very, totally, completely different to ours. There is no place for improvisation. You don't do that. Improvising is just going astray. It's wrong. Okay? And it normally is 2.5 hours. I even took Dave Kingswood to an Orthodox service. It's just, yeah, he suffered. Yeah, it was in Russian. So it was a mix of Russian, Greek, obviously, and tiny bit of French as well. Why not? Okay, Armenians. They're fantastic, the Armenians. You've got three churches for the Armenians. Okay? You've got the Orthodox Church. Okay? You also have a small part of the Armenian church who has joined back the Catholic Church, and they've deserted the camp, so they're just not very popular among Armenians themselves. And you also have an evangelical Armenian church, which is the only Reformed church from an Orthodox church. And I took part to one of the symposium in Aleppo. When I was in Syria, it was quite interesting to see all these people with the archiepiscopus, the archbishop, if you want, being there, but being present in a service of a different church, because they acknowledge him as the archbishop of the church, but they disagree on the theology and the way you're going to practice. They are very much like us. They're Reformed Protestant, just like us. They do the same thing as us, all in Armenian, and they are all over the Near East. You've got a lot of Armenians in Syria. You've got some in Iraq. You've got a lot of them in Iran. Okay? Nestorians. You may have heard of those. Kenise. Kenise al-Sharqi. Kenise, that's the word for church. Okay, here's the quiz bit. What is the name of the Israeli parliament? Knesset. Okay, that's Hebrew, Knesset. That means assembly. Kenise. That word, Kenise. That's Arabic. And that means church, the assembly. Okay, so between Knesset and Kenise, there's hardly any difference. Okay. Timothy the First. Catholicos, okay, Catholicos, that's his title, a kind of pope, if you want. Catholicos, Timothy the First, around 800 AD. He was the Catholicos, the head of the church of the East in Baghdad around the 800 AD. That was the biggest church in the world. in Baghdad. He had in Baghdad more faithful, more people going to his churches than there was any Muslims going to mosques. Around about 800 AD, the majority of people in what is today Iraq, more or less, they were still massively Christian. His church was from the Euphrates River, I don't know if you can put it on the map, but all the way to China. There's pagoda that are still standing today. They look like pagoda. They just go like that. They're very tall. But at the top of them, there is a space for a bell. They were built around about 800, 900 AD. And these were actual churches all the way into China. When we say that China knows nothing about Christianity, it's completely false. The Uyghur, a people that are in the west of China, their history is a Christian history. Slowly, they moved away and converted to Islam, and they are now majoritively Muslims. But for 300, 400, 500 years, they were mostly Christians all the way into the middle of China. Timothy I was the greatest Christian leader around about 800 AD. Okay. Right, all these names, do they mean anything to you? Maronites, Melkites, Chaldeans. They're basically people who have rejoined the Catholic Church. And in Iraq, most Christians are part of the Catholic Church. They don't do the Catholic Mass because they've got a better liturgy than the Catholic Mass. They've got an older one. They've got the genuine one in the original language. Why would they change? No nonsense. No Latin. Come on. Who cares about Latin? No. They still have their own liturgy that they have built over the centuries. And they've got good grounding to sort of say, well, yeah, you know, we go back all the way to the New Testament. And if you want to meet a church that is the closest you can think of the New Testament, come and see us. They would say, not me. Okay. In all of that, you've got some evangelicals. Okay. They can get into trouble simply because it's the religion of the Americans, isn't it? So politically, it's difficult. It's just like in Cuba. Evangelicals in Cuba can be persecuted between brackets or speech marks, whatever, simply because it's the religion of the enemy, it's the religion of the Americans. Okay, right. Tariq Aziz, does that bring memories to you? Tariq Aziz, he was who? Who was he? He was his foreign minister, a Christian, Tariq Aziz, because the Christians were doing very well under Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was very secular. He didn't care about religion at all. You're a Christian? Do I care? Just leave me alone. Just do as I say. I'm a dictator. Just you know, bow down to me. Do what you want. Abdallah. Is that a good Christian name or is that a Muslim name? Come on. If I'm asking the question, it's got to be a Christian name. Abdallah is a Christian name. It's also a Muslim name, but Allah is simply the name of God. It's the word God. It's a common noun. It's not a proper name for the God of the Muslims. A Christian all through the Middle East will use Allah for God. Okay? So maybe in the recording you've heard Allah in the liturgy. Yes, it is, because that's the El that you have got in Israel. Allah, it's that one. Okay. Boutros Ghali. They like it when it doubles up. You know, it's good. Okay. Former Secretary General of the United Nations. Egyptian. Christian. French educated, just like Tariq Aziz. Since the 1500s, the Sultan have given the right to the French kings to protect Christians in the Turkish, the Ottoman Empire, in the 1500s. Okay. It means that most educated Christians in the Near East are French educated. It means that they are quite anti-American because of their French education. It's just okay. It also has a lot of bearing because when persecuted, it's the first port of call. Armenians, when they were persecuted by the Turks and exterminated by the hundred thousands, the first place they went to was France. Christians in Iraq have been recently, a lot of them have been shipped to France. Even if France is a completely secular country, that sort of says we've got nothing to do with the religion, that's tradition. And that's what Christians have been doing for centuries and centuries. When they've got trouble, okay, you go back to the protector, and the protector, oh, that's France. Well, not really. I don't think France has any means to protect any one of them. Okay, but there's about 2,000 Iraqis that have been flown into France in the last couple of weeks. Okay, that's information. In case you didn't want it, you've got it. Okay. It's one thing to sort of say, oh, Muslims are picking on Christians yet again. But what do we know about these Christians, really? Okay. Let's move on. The Good Samaritan. Okay. You're going to have a break because we're going to read that together, and maybe I should organize for somebody that has a different accent to mine to read that. Is there anybody that would fancy coming to the microphone? I should have. Yeah. If not, I'll read it out with a genuine accent. Pete, you just want to do that.
On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? He replied. How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. You've answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor?
Okay. It's okay. It's all right, you can sit down if you don't mind. Okay. Okay, first thing to notice is that there is no question on what the authority is. Okay. That expert of the law, a good Jew, and Jesus, they don't argue about that. They sort of, okay, we're using the same text. Okay? The point is the interpretation. The difference between Jews and Christians is the interpretation of the text. That's what it is. Even if, Jesus never sort of said, I'm no longer a Jew, it's just not quite in the text, really. Okay. That expert of the law, what do you think it is? We probably have another word, a big name for these people that were quite versed into scriptures. What do you think? Starts with PH. Okay, Pharisees. No, the answer is not Jesus. No. Pharisees. And you've got here a Pharisee, good Pharisee. And I'm not going to just argue the point, but Jesus can come across a Pharisee. In terms of the way he's dealing with the law, he's much closer to the Pharisees than to any other groups inside the Judaism of his time. Okay, here's a question. I apologize for the American spelling, okay? As an English teacher, I have to point to the fact that it's O-U-R in good spelling. Not neighbor with O-R, common. Jesus, and the person he's talking to, or the person who is asking him questions, they do agree on what matters, the text of reference, the authority. Okay? Love your neighbor as yourself. But who is my neighbor? He's basically asking, okay, I'm a good Jew. My duty is to make sure that all other Jews are looked after. I have a duty of care for all Jews, which excludes anybody that wouldn't be, clearly. Okay? That's the question. As if we were sort of saying, hey, we have a duty of care of Christians in Iraq, but we don't have any duty of care for anybody there. Yazidi, Sunni, Shia, or the handful of Jews that are still in Baghdad. They're still there. Okay. Next. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. We've got a Pharisee asking the question. Jesus, in his answer, he tells a story. Okay, here's the parable. He tells a story. Okay, bad example, a priest. As a Pharisee, you know that priests are bad. Okay? These are the sort of bad people. Then we've got a Levite. Again, it's sort of quite close to being a priest. You know, it's just everybody knows, as a Pharisee, you all know that, you know, Levites are not good people. Okay? As a Pharisee, you expect that you've got the priest, boo, and then you've got the Levites, boo, and then, now, you're going to have the good guy coming in. He's got to be a Pharisee. He's got to. And that's where Jesus gets the punch right in the liver. Metaphorically, okay, there's no literal... Yep, okay. Hey, here's the Samaritan. As he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii, 2 silver coins, and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Okay? There's a duty of care, and it's costly, and he's doing something about the situation. Okay? Even if priests are forbidden to go anywhere near a dead body. So yes, you can sort of say because of religious rules, maybe a priest should not go near somebody that looks possibly dead. That's a feeble excuse. Anyway, okay, let's finish it off. Here's the moral, the point of the story. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy, who had compassion on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Go and have compassion. Okay. Really, what is the link? Well, it's pretty obvious in many ways. Can we have the next term? Okay. The enemies are the priest and the Levites for the expert of the law, for the Pharisee. These are the type of people he doesn't like. And Jesus turns things around because he brings in a type of people that clearly has nothing to do with what it's all about. A Samaritan. I may as well just talk about a good Muslim. Well, exactly, that's the point. Okay. He is not the type of people that could be good. I think that's what Jesus is actually saying. It's not types of people. As soon as you think in terms of types of people, you're out of it. You have to make yourself a neighbor to the other, whoever that other is. Okay? for Christians in Iraq, fleeing Daesh, that ISIS organization. Where did they flee? They went north to get some protection from the Kurds. Most Christians in Mosul, Erbil, they had to find protection from the Kurds. And the armed organizations of the Kurds are called the Peshmerga, who are Sunni Muslims. So we can't simplify things and sort of say, okay, that shows that Muslims are always bad to Christians. No, no, no. Daesh are nutters. Okay, that's certain. No question about that. But for Christians, they need to find protection somewhere. They were not going to get it from the United States. George Bush got it all wrong and messed it all up big time with the help of somebody else I'm not going to mention. But they were not able to provide any help, and I don't think they should, because anything they would do would make things worse, in my just humble opinion. Okay, it's time to have a break, I think. Don't you think? Yes, yes, let's have a break, let's have a break. And a song, and a song. And for those of you that have either a Catholic or an Anglican background, you'll feel at home, okay? Because there's nothing to, you know, you should never change. The creed is the creed. It's an old, it's a good 1990s song. It's just, it's great. Okay, following the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is, you know, a good parable, it's in the Gospel, here's the alternative parable on the next... Jaws, yeah? You know that?
Yeah.
Still 1970s, so after the 1990s we go back to the 1970s, you know, just... Okay, what is that film about? It's about a big shark. Big white shark, okay. It's a kind of horror movie. Okay. Quick quiz. Name the director.
Spielberg. Spielberg, that sounds Jewish to me.
He is. So, is it just about a white shark? Or is there something much deeper?
Yeah.
Much deeper... in the story. Name another two films by the same director, Steven Spielberg.
E.T.
E.T.
Oh, it's funny, because you've got somebody who... you've got the alien
that is so different that you don't like him, because he's just different. He's alien. And nobody sees the face of those that come to get E.T. Okay, another film by Spielberg.
Schindler's List. Okay.
It's about doing the business. Okay, you can be German and do good things. In the middle of the war, there's a parable of the good German for a Jew. Okay? Just like there's a parable of the good Muslim, because in the Second World War, there was quite a few Muslims who saved some Jews. Turkish diplomats, for example. Quite a lot of them exfiltrated Jews from Europe. Japanese diplomats. There's a guy who saved hundreds of Jews, a Japanese guy. He had absolutely nothing, he didn't know anything about the Jews. He's just, oh, they're doing that, that's not right. I'm going to do something about that. And he managed to exfiltrate hundreds of Jews from Eastern Europe to a place of safety. Okay. Another film. And I give you a few ideas. Evil Fuel Truck 1971. No? Maybe it's just no. Duel, do you remember that film? Duel? No? It's a truck. It's a big truck. And he tries to kill somebody who is in a Plymouth Valiant, one of these cars. and you never see the driver, but you've got this big truck, fuel truck, that is just coming from everywhere. You don't know where to expect it, but it just comes in. And it's exactly the same story as Jaws. You don't know where it's going to come from, but it's always there. You can't expect, but it just comes at that point. When that truck is destroyed by just going over the cliff, you've got a bit of a dinosaur voice, and you've got the truck just roaring as if it was a beast. And the same recording is used at the end of Jaws when the big white shark is finally destroyed. Okay, what is this about? Oh, yeah, that's Jaws, the answer to the last question. Okay, let's get to the point. Next slide, please. Okay. When is it going to surface? That's the question. There is an inhuman, deep monster that can surface at any time. There will be one, two individuals that will stand. Some of them will die. That's Jaws, isn't it? One of them survives, but they prevail on this dark side that is just surfacing every now and then, and you don't know when. Okay. Application. Okay? Which is going to be there. When can we see this dark, inhuman monster surfacing in the history of men? Okay. Is this that organization? Yes. I can see that. Yes, very much so. There's been war in the Arab world, has been plagued by war for the last 60, 70 years. Now, it would be very quick for us to sort of say, it's obviously the Muslims, because we don't do that. Well, we've got two world wars on our account, and that's not great as a track record, is it? Really? Let's be honest. Okay. England, 1290, do you remember? Okay, that's where the Jews were expelled from the kingdom. And the biggest community, the biggest Jewish community that was in York, was massacred to the last. That's England. When did the first Jewish communities come to England? With William the Conqueror. He was just not just the French, he was just, you know, Jews as well, because they're good organizers, good administrators, so he brought in a few with him. Okay, and they were allowed in by Oliver Cromwell. One of the good things he's done, there's a few other things that were not so good, but okay. Marah, Jerusalem, 1099. In Jerusalem, 1099, that's when the first crusade managed to take Jerusalem. And, the entire population of the city, who knows, between 10 and 20,000 were dispatched in a few hours. Marah, just a few weeks before, that's where a few crusaders barbecued some of the locals, a few hundreds of them. Okay. That's when this monster comes up, when you sort of think that you've got mission and nothing is going to stand in the way. So yes, the monster is appearing in the Muslim world. Yes, it has appeared in ours. Not so long ago, in Germany, it did. Okay. First World War. That's where a lot of churches lost their credibility. I think Christians could have done something to stop that First World War. It didn't happen. George Bell, have you heard of that man? Pretty much one of the greatest Christians, I think, in the UK. George Bell was a very lonely voice that raised in the Lords to sort of say, is there a reason why we keep bombing civilians in Germany? That was 1944, 1945. Is there a reason why we've been killing tens of thousands of people that have absolutely nothing? Why are we just doing this? That cost him the title of Archbishop, because after that, there was no way he would get that. But he stood in Parliament, in the Lords, and sort of say, we cannot do that. This must stop. And there was a lot of reaction. Okay? They deserve it. They've done that to us just a few years ago. They deserve it. No, no child deserves that. Okay. Making yourself a neighbor. Aid has to go to all humans. That's what it is. That's what I understand from the parable of the Good Samaritan. It is not a question of categories. Those, yes, they're good, I'm going to help. Those, I'm not sure, I won't. You cannot do that. I don't think you can do that when you face the parable of the Good Samaritan. No categories of good, bad, worse. And I think that's what Jesus was pointing at. You have to make yourself a neighbor. It's no question of just deciding, oh, those I like. No, love your enemies, even if you don't like Muslims in general. Okay. That's a question. I'm going to leave it there. Obviously, there's a lot of debate there, and you know, some of my opinions are my opinions. However, I do believe that that was what God wanted me to bring to you tonight. We're going to finish with a time of prayer. And I would like you to get into groups of one, maybe two tables together. The nearest needs a lot of prayer. There's a lot of people there that are suffering. There's a lot of people there that are fighting. There's a lot of people that need convincing that fighting is not a solution. And you can be wanting to fight and fight for decades and decades, from grandfather to grandson. It's not going to get you anywhere. So many issues within Iraq, Syria, and the conflict, the ongoing conflict between Palestinians and Israelis.